Welcome to episode 47 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me today, my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, it's a good morning, I think.
It's a very good morning if you happen to live in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's great if you live in Milwaukee. It's not bad for you personally either. Before we get into the talks about the couple of moves that the Brewers have made, which are a big deal, reshape their outfield, I do want to give you a little bit of love for your baseball. I forget what we actually call this, but it's the Saber Analytics Research Award finalist nomination, I guess, is the best way to put it. Your piece on catcher concussions that you published at CBS Sports is one of the five finalists for the Contemporary Commentary Award, which is a pretty awesome and pretty prestigious award for recognizing the best baseball writing of the year. So I wanted to say congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, obviously it's a very stacked category, as I suppose all the categories are. And, you know, anyone who wins that is obviously pretty deserving. And yeah, it's neat to be recognized with those names and those pieces. So.
Yeah, I mean, you can see on that list, it's Sam Miller and Eno Saris and Jeff Passan and Emma Bocelleri. So it's a really, really great group that you get to be a part of. And I don't know, it's hard to you know, pick one of those articles out of that bunch because they're all so good. But I do think I have to be rooting for you as a co-host, as a co-worker. I definitely feel like I'm pulling for you on this one.
Yeah, we have to bring some prestige to this brand because Lord knows doing full episodes about the San Diego Padres is not getting it done.
That's a good point. So let's talk about another small market team. So we actually surprisingly have some moves to talk about but they're all kind of centered around the Milwaukee Brewers. So within the span of about an hour and a half yesterday, the Brewers completely remade their outfield. They remade two-thirds of the outfield. So we'll talk first about the splashier of the two moves, which is trading for the Marlins' Christian Yelich. Let's just go over the move itself real quickly. The return for Miami, for Yelich, is Lewis Brinson, Monty Harrison, Isan Diaz, and Yamamoto. I forget the guy's first name.
Jordan
Yamamoto, who's a right-handed pitcher, the least impactful prospect of the deal. Give me your quick thoughts on what this deal means for the Marlins' teardown, and if you think it was a good deal for the Brewers.
Well, I'm still annoyed with the Marlins' tore it down because, as one of my editors, RJ White, put it last night, the Marlins have now given away four starting outfielders to other teams this winter, if you include D. Gordon. And it's just really disappointing because you look at what they received here, and sure, it's fine within the vacuum. You could even argue it's good because they got, I believe it's two of Milwaukee's top three prospects, three of their top 10, and then Yamamoto. I don't know, he's interesting in the sense that he's also the fourth piece in this deal, whereas, you know, maybe in one of their earlier trades, he would have been the first or second piece in the deal, so that's fine. But from the Brewers' perspective, I like this a lot because, you know, we talk a lot about surplus value and whatnot. Yelich is, like, he's already an all-star caliber player. He's shown that he's able to consistently be an above-average hitter. He has experience across the outfield. You know, depending on your read of the situation, he's probably not going to play center field because they went out and signed Lorenzo Cain right afterward. But he could do that if Cain is injured and they don't want to call upon one of their ever dozen other outfielders to do so. And he's young. He's signed to a very team-friendly deal. They could potentially run through 2022. So you're getting basically everything you could possibly want here from Yelich. And, you know, if Brinson turns into this guy, that's a very good career path for Brinson, and same with Harrison. So you're basically getting the ideal version of one of those prospects, and you're getting him without the risk that comes with being a prospect.
Yeah, no question. I definitely really like this deal for the Brewers. And then, like you said, they immediately afterwards inked Lorenzo Cain to a five-year, $80 million deal, bringing him back to Milwaukee after years in Kansas City, which is really interesting. So you've got Cain, who's likely to be the starting center fielder. You've got Yelich, who's likely to be the starting left fielder. You would assume Ryan Braun is going to be the starting right fielder. And then this team also has a couple of other outfielders. They've got Domingo Santana, who had a breakout year last year. They've got Keon Broxton, Jeff Sullivan's favorite player, who's, maybe a second division starter, maybe needs a little playing time to figure out if he's going to be a regular going forward, but very talented. You've got Brett Phillips, who's got nothing left to prove in the minor leagues. Theoretically, you could have run a starting outfield out there of Phillips, Broxton, and Domingo Santana without embarrassing yourself too much. And those guys are like the second tier on the depth chart now. So I'm really kind of surprised that they've built up this stock of outfielders. Not that it's a problem, but now I definitely feel they've got to go in some direction and move at least one of them, if not more than one of them, in order to, clear up some playing time.
Yeah, and the rumor had been that they were already shopping Domingo Santana, which earlier in the offseason didn't necessarily make a ton of sense to me. He's a substandard fielder, but people forget that he was also the best hitter on that team last season. That said, now it obviously makes way more sense to move Santana because you're probably not going to get much in return for Braun, and my guess is they're going to look to acquire a starting pitcher. Couldn't tell you a specific name, but obviously the Rays could match up there. And there are a few other teams who, in theory, could match up. And, we just talked about their outfield depth. We haven't even mentioned Corey Ray, who,
Right.
was their first round pick in 2016. We didn't mention Trent Grisham, the former Trent Clark, who was their first round pick in 2015. Those are both top 10 prospects in their system, presumably higher now than they were last night, or before last night, I should say. And, I think Ray could reach double A this year. Grisham, I believe, was already in double A, so there is a lot of outfield depth, and there's more coming. I will say on Broxton that he feels like Randal Grichuk 2.0, except with a way better glove in center field, because it's all about the exit velocity there. But I don't buy that he's ever going to make consistent contact enough to really tap into that perceived upside. Could be wrong on that, but he's also almost 28 years old, so I feel fairly comfortable in saying he's just not going to make that next step. But yeah, this is a pretty fun team. It's a good team. Again, I expect they're going to add a starting pitcher at some point, a real starting pitcher, not just what they've added. And I don't know. I don't know if they're good enough to beat the Cubs, but I think this is a pretty fun and bold move on their part, and I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, me too. I think this is great. It's always fun to see a team kind of rise up from rebuilding to contending. The Brewers did that kind of surprisingly last year. The Kane signing to me is a real coup. Like, I think that him getting only $16 million a year, yes, it's over 5 years, but the average annual value of this deal is very low to me for a player of Lorenzo Cain's caliber. He provides the anchor for that outfield defensively. I mean, between Kane and Yelich, Kane is an okay, if not great, defensive center fielder at this point, in my view. And with him turning 32 early next season, he's obviously not going to be long for that, dynamic center fielder role, despite his crazy athleticism. But Yelich is a very good fielder. Braun is not great, but he may not be long for the outfield. He may be moving to first base at some point. I just think that this is a really interesting, good outfield, and I'm very excited for it. But I think that the Kane signing is crazy good for this team because he's a legitimate offensive threat. He can hold down the defense in center field. He's the guy who I had as like one of the top five free agents on the market this year. And he's coming back to a franchise that he knows well in Milwaukee. I mean, he came up through the Milwaukee system. I just don't see this being a bad deal at all. Even if they're going to be on the hook for Kane's contract when he's, 36 years old, I don't see this as really being a problem. This is the type of move that I would really be interested in making if I were looking to contend this year, next year, in a couple of years, and really kind of go for it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess the only negative is that you're signing I believe he's 32 years old now, or he's getting close to being 32 years old. So you're signing him for his, 32 through 36 or whatever age seasons. And there's obviously some risk in that, but there's risk in every deal. And you're right that the money just does not seem like what Kane should have received. And you're also right that I think he would have been a top three free agent for me if I had done a top 50. I don't. Off the top of my head, I'm arguing whether I would have had Martinez first. I've said before I preferred him out of all the Royals free agents, no matter the cost. And yeah, he's a dynamic player. And you're right, even if he slips a little bit, they have the flexibility with their outfield depth and with their ability to move guys around to find a better spot for him as he declines defensively. So this is a very, very fun signing. And again, it's just great to see a team that's not necessarily thought of as a superpower or a large market team take the bull by the horns when they have a chance to not only win some games, make the postseason, maybe even win their division and actually go for it rather than just kind of sitting on their hands and letting the opportunity pass them by like some teams in their division have done.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about their odds for winning the National League Central, and I think that's kind of it's you know TBD at this point, because with their six-person outfield, with the couple of other holes that they have on the roster, it seems obvious that you don't make these moves that they've made for Kane and for Yelich and for even for Ulys Chassin in a vacuum. So I think there has to be some sort of next move coming, whether it's to trade one of the outfielders for a starter, whether it's to sign a starter, whether it's to sign a second baseman, because that's kind of a hole for this team too. Jonathan Villar did not hold up after a breakout 2016. He didn't look that great last year. So it's kind of an open question as to how they're going to address the couple of other holes that they have on the roster. But they have the talent to go out and get people, and they also seem to have the money to go out and get people, because this is a team that had over $100 million payroll as recently as 2015. Now, over the last 2 years, they've been the bottom payroll in all of baseball. I think they were 30th on opening day for both of 2016 and 2017. But if this team goes back to $100 million payroll, they could theoretically trade somebody away and go out and sign a Jake Arrieta or Yu Darvish or something like that. I think that there's this room here for them to jump up from, you know, they're good but not good enough to make the wild card record last year to a legitimate like 90 win team this year if they spend the money and they're able to make a good trade to bring in another piece. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, well, we've seen them rumored with Yu Darvish. We've already seen that connection. And, you know, I don't know. I think he probably ends up with the Cubs, because how often does Theo Epstein not get his man? But
yeah,
you're right.
True.
Milwaukee could, in theory, pivot and go with Arrieta, or if they want, you know, someone in the Cobb-Lynn range, of course, they could also try to make a trade for Chris Archer or settle on Jake Odorizzi, or, you know, there's any combination of paths they can take. And flexibility is, you know, I mean, they have flexibility, as you're saying. They have the prospects. They potentially have the money to spend. And this ownership group has shown in the past, when they have a chance to win, that they're willing to put up the money for a big payroll. And, you know, they should probably do that all the time, because, you know, there's no reason to be last in the league if you have the potential to put up a average or better payroll. But that's a topic for another day. The point is, this is a team in a very good situation right now. And I don't know, maybe they should call Miami and see what it would take to get Real Muto as well, because Stephen Vogt and I believe it's Manny Pena are not exactly inspiring a lot of confidence in me as I sit here and look at their lineup. But yeah, there's the sky is the limit for this team in terms of adding more talent over the coming weeks to really bolster their chances of dethroning the Cubs.
You know what? You mentioned Jake Odorizzi. Boy, that would be super weird if they went out and traded for Odorizzi, because if you remember that trade in 2010 that brought Zach Greinke to the Brewers from the Royals, the guys who went back the other way were Lorenzo Cain, who's back on the Brewers, Jeremy Jeffress, who I believe is back on the Brewers.
Yes.
Jake Odorizzi, and then Alcides Escobar, who's a free agent. They could bring him in. They could bring back the entire group that they traded for Zach Greinke and roll with that team. That would be really bizarre. And even 3 out of 4 coming back is pretty strange. But I guess it goes to show that they know those guys from 7 or 8 years ago and value them. So that would be quite a turn of events if that were something that would happen. I would really like to see them make a deal and get somebody who can play second base or who can play catcher. The Real Muto thing, I don't see happening, because I think that the Nationals can make a more compelling offer for JT Real Muto at this point. He could end up in Washington, and Juan Soto or somebody really interesting could end up going back in that sort of trade. But I do think you're right. They do have these holes that still need to be filled. I wonder if David Stearns and company can fill them with just, like average-ish players and be able to make a deal that would work out. But the hole at catcher, Jonathan Lucroy is still a free agent. I mean, they could reunite with him, and that would be a really interesting move too.
I feel like you have Stockholm Syndrome from the Mets at this point, and you're just wanting every team to sign their old players now. Like, you're getting ready to suggest, I don't even know who you're going to suggest. I can't even
Bring Prince
name
Fielder
a.
back. Bring Ricky Weeks back. Get everyone. Bring the whole band back together.
Opening day starter, Ben Sheets. But no, I mean, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And, Jorge Castillo of the Washington Post reported that the Nationals are unwilling to talk about four players and potential deals. And Juan Soto is one of those, Victor Robles, Trey Turner, and Anthony Rendon. So I don't know if the Marlins will be getting Soto back, but I would agree that the Nationals are probably the favorite because, Rizzo is not afraid of making bold trades. And how is Realmuto underrated? Because he is underrated, isn't he?
Well, yes and no. I have some legitimate concerns about his defense. We have these great catcher framing numbers, but I watched some of his games last year, and I do not buy that he is all of a sudden a top-tier pitch framer after his career of not being very good at that. Is he underrated? Absolutely. It's very easy to be underrated when you play for the Marlins and your name isn't Stanton. But he's an excellent hitting catcher. I think that that can paper over for sure. Even if he is a bad framer, he's never shown that he's a terrible, terrible, like lowest tier Ryan Domet framer because nobody is anymore. But I definitely think he would be an upgrade for almost any team. He's an all-star caliber player at his best. I have some concerns that the framing isn't going to hold up, that he'll lose a little value there. He may not be the type of catcher I'd really want for a young pitching staff, but on a team like the Nationals, I think he's a really great fit.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't know. I guess I don't have anything to add there other than the fact that he does not pass the eye test with framing. Does that make you question the degree that he was in the negative before? Like, do you buy that he was negative 13 to negative 15 runs? Or do you think he's just closer to that negative five range? I mean, that's seemingly a small difference, but it could, that's what, half a win? If it's off by that much, you're talking about a guy who over the last two seasons has actually put together closer to 10 wins than 9 wins, which I guess, again, is fairly insignificant, big picture, but
I mean, with the single season framing numbers, I feel like we have to regress them a lot. In 2017, a lot of people's single season numbers completely flipped. So I wonder if there's something a little, I won't say off with the 2017 numbers, but something could have changed in the last year that makes me now kind of more hesitant. I want to give bigger error bars on the Baseball Prospectus framing numbers, but because the eye test is not the best way to judge catcher framing, especially for somebody like me who's not a scout. That's something that really, it's kind of like a lot of other aspects of defense where the aggregation of a lot of data makes a bigger deal than being able to see six or seven instances that are either good or bad and trying to build out an entire body of season-long performance based on that. So I want to regress it. I want to regress the numbers back to, something a little bit more towards the median. I do think that it could have been a big shift from one season to another, so I'm less worried about regressing his older numbers a lot, but I do think that he has improved. I just think that the swing was so big in this last year that something seems a little off about it.
that's fair. And we've talked so much about Milwaukee, and we've even gotten off topic here talking about Realmuto. We haven't only talked about the Marlins' return on this deal. So do you have any thoughts on the four prospects they received in return?
I think this is a good haul. I don't think that this is like the Ozuna or the Stanton trade where the Marlins failed to get full value back for their asset. Now, do I necessarily think that I would rather have these four prospects than Christian Yelich? No. I don't think that's the case. But getting Monty Harrison in it, I mean, Brinson is the headliner. He's the probable top 10, maybe top 20 prospect. He can step right in and play outfield, play center field for this team. Gives them, you know, a real outfielder because they've traded away so many. Some upside, great pickup. But Harrison is kind of, I won't say the key to the deal for me, but he's what makes this deal from being a not that an exciting return to a, well, we've got a player here who could really come out and be a star level player, an all-star level player, in addition to Brinson as part of this deal. I like Yusan Diaz, and honestly, I don't know anything about Jordan Yamamoto, but I think that Harrison gives this enough upside where you can look at this from the Marlins perspective and say, okay, I get this one.
That's fair. With regards to Yamamoto, I did not know he existed until last night. And then I did some reading. I watched, I consulted with the world's best scout, which is YouTube. And basically what I gathered is that he is a smallish right-hander with a three-quarters arm slot who gets by because of his spin rate on his fastball and his curveball. You know, you're going to question whether he can maintain enough plane on his fastball to avoid giving up home runs. And Eric Longenhagen, among others, seemingly suggested that his future is probably in the bullpen, which makes sense to me because, you know, how often does that profile actually get to stick in the rotation? Mm-hmm. But with regards to the other ones, I mean, you're potentially talking about two all-star outfielders if Brinson and Harrison hit their ceilings, which they're, you know, realistically not going to do. But you're right. You know, Harrison's a very intriguing prospect in his own right. He's going to be overshadowed by Brinson here a little bit. And, you know, Diaz, look, I feel like I've been low on Diaz since he was originally traded to Milwaukee in the Gene Segura deal because teenage second baseman is not really a thing. Like, if you're a second baseman on your high school team, you're probably not going to play college ball, or at least you're not going to play college ball at a good college. So maybe I'm just being too hard on him for that because, again, he was considered one of the best prospects in the Milwaukee system. But again, the return really comes down to Harrison and Brinson. And it's interesting because they both kind of have the same issues in a sense. You know, they've both had durability issues of staying on the field. I mean, Brinson has never played more than like 105 games in a season.
Yeah.
And you know, he's been around forever, it feels like. I remember when he was drafted, I remember watching his swing, and he has really put in the effort to improve his swing. And there's still some smoothing out that he needs to do because, you know, I think during his MLB stint last year, which was a very small sample and all, he made contact less than 70% of the time, mm-hmm. which, again, you know, he's a work in progress still, even though he's been around for a while. And I don't know. I think if you look at it in a vacuum, this is a fairish return for Yelich. I mean, they got, again, two potential all-star outfielders. If they hit their ceilings or get close to it, they got a potential starting second baseman, depending on what you think of Diaz. And they also got probably a bullpen arm who, you know, who knows, maybe his stuff plays up a little bit in the pen and he's a potential seventh inning guy. I don't know. I doubt it because, again, that profile, you know, whatever. But the point is, this is a fair return, I think. And yeah, I'm curious to see how these guys develop because I guess the one thing I would say, and it's kind of depressing if you're a Marlins fan here, is, oh, we have a chance to have two all-star outfielders. We just traded away three, though.
Right.
So, yeah, it's still a tough day in Miami, I think.
I think so, too, because I think that it's, you know, Yelich is kind of underrated as a consistent force offensively and defensively. And I know he's gotten a little bit older over the last couple of years, but there's still that potential if he starts putting the ball in the air more, if he figures that out, he could become, you know, that next level of hitter. His problem obviously has been consistent about him putting the ball on the ground too often. And that's really the only thing he doesn't do well. Pretty much everything else that he does is excellent. He can play some center. He has great plate coverage. He is a kind of a hitter's hitter. He's also the kind of guy with that profile that if they do start elevating the ball more, it's very much, to me, that Daniel Murphy kind of profile, that Justin Turner kind of offensive profile where you start elevating the ball a little bit and you really become that next class of hitter. I don't say it's a given that that's going to happen because, quite frankly, there's no reason he shouldn't have been elevating the ball to begin with. But I could definitely see it if he sells out for a little bit of fly ball power, especially playing in Miller Park, you're looking at a really, really impactful outfielder. And, the Marlins already had that. The Marlins already had plenty of impactful outfielders. Now they're just hoping that they have this same crop of outfielders, I don't know, 5 or 6 years down the line in Harrison and Brinson and Maggie Sierra. And, if they do have that crop of outfielders 5 or 6 years down the line, they're the Marlins. They could be trying to trade them for another crop of outfielders at that point. So that's not really much of a hopeful situation for them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and let's play everyone's favorite game here, which is name the Miami Marlins lineup as told by rosterresource.com. So you can
Okay.
go in anywhere you want to here, but name everyone who is projected to be a starter for them.
Okay, so right now you've got Real Muto at catcher, Justin Bour at first base, right? Okay, those are the easy ones. I don't know, I'll probably differ from Roster Resource, but Brian Anderson at third base, JT Riddle at shortstop. Second base is really, really tough. I bet they've got Derek Dietrich there, but if he's playing regularly at second, there's a problem.
No, you're overthinking this one. Think about who they got back in the Stanton deal.
Castro. Starlin Castro. Okay, yeah, I just have no faith that he'll be on the team come opening day. All right, the outfield is a mess. So they haven't brought Ichiro back yet, right? So honestly, I don't know what they've got on there as their starting outfield. I think Brinson has to slot in.
He's in center.
Okay, and then the corners are just, I don't know if they have anybody left on the 40 man.
Infielders, let's put it that way.
Their infielder. So Dietrich, maybe?
He's in right.
Bizarre. It's probably his best position. And then, as far as the left fielder goes, your guess is as good as mine. I just cannot imagine.
Prada.
Who?
Prada.
Otto?
Martin Prada.
Oh, Martin Prado. Yeah, that makes no sense. This is a weirdly, weirdly put together team. If their starting outfield next year is Martin Prado, Derek Dietrich and Lewis Brinson, something has gone deeply wrong, and I think it's clear that is actually what's happened. I'm sure they move some of these guys and they bring in more, I don't want to say like second division younger guys to play the outfield because it makes no sense. If they're really going to run Prado out there in left field every day, that's going to be really ugly and weird.
And things are subject to change. There's certainly no shortage of available free agents out there that they can, in theory, slot into these spots. But it's going to be a bad year in Miami. You got to hope that some of these kids maybe break out or find their way to the majors. And oh gosh, they're going to play the service time game too now, aren't they?
I
They're
mean,
absolutely going to do that.
I would think they have to at this point because, I mean, what are they going to do? Alienate the fan base? Like, I think that ship has sailed. So if Brinson doesn't come up until June or something like that, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I was kind of thinking before the season they might bring in somebody like Carlos Gonzalez as like their, oh, we did something this offseason and we're not going to field a completely barren roster, but at this point, after all these moves, I don't see him spending any money on a guy like that.
No, they almost have no reason to. Like you said, if you're going to go this far to that side, why even? And the thing is, I don't think they're necessarily done trading players. Just not just Real Muto. In theory, maybe they could find a market for Prado. Bauer probably would appeal to some teams. You could also even say Dan Straley, who somehow, he's revitalized his career. I don't know. I don't know if anybody would take the bullpen arms that they would like to trade, but
I think
it's
Brent
certainly.
Ziegler's got value. I think
You
he'd be
do.
the guy that you would try to move. I think he could bounce back a little bit this year. If nothing else, I think teams like having different looks out of the bullpen. So I think some team would be willing to take on that contract. It's not crazy.
Jerry DePoto just picked up the phone once you said different looks out of the bullpen
I
because he
know.
loves that stuff.
That's his jam. Unfortunately, though, as I've heard, Jerry DePoto has no more room on his roster for any more pitchers. He said something yesterday that we're not pursuing top-end starting pitchers because we already have enough guys, which is probably one of the craziest things I've heard a general manager say. The Mariners do not have enough guys to stop them from pursuing a good pitcher.
What he really meant is because we have no money.
Yes,
Like,
that would be honest. That would be an honest response. So I'm for that.
I will say, not that I'm defending that, they do have a lot of pitchers on their projected roster that are out of options. I mean, in the rotation, the only guy who could be optioned is James Paxton, which means Erasmo Ramirez and Marco Gonzalez got to make the roster or they're exposed to waivers. Obviously, they gave up, a decent prospect for Gonzalez, so they probably owe it to him to see what he's got. Whereas Ramirez, you could say, oh, he could slot into the bullpen, but in the bullpen, the only people who have options are Edwin Diaz, their closer, and James Pazos, who figures to be their top or secondary lefty in the bullpen. They also have Mike Morin, Sean Armstrong, who I believe you're a fan of for whatever reason, David Phelps, Nick Vincent, and Juan Nicasio. So I don't agree with the idea they have too much talent, but they do have a lot of unmovable parts. So maybe DePoto was thinking of that when he said that, but probably not. He probably just meant we have no money.
Yeah, I think that's much more likely. Also, I think that Jerry DePoto could potentially trade somebody. I
Dot
mean,
dot
I
dot.
know, right? It's a wild thing. So, yeah, what you were talking about, the Marlins moving on from guys, like, I feel like Martin Prado is like an ultimate utility piece for some team. The only question is whether or not the Marlins would be willing to eat some of the contract, because I think there's a lot of teams that would like to have him, but not at his contract value. So I think that's a move that I would not be surprised at all to see them make. But Justin Bour, I keep thinking he should go to Colorado.
Oh, jeez.
Colorado needs a left-handed hitting first baseman. Yeah, there's three on the open market, but I think that he might be, he probably not as good as Logan Morrison, but might be on that same tier with Lucas Duda, and I think that would be a good pickup for that team.
No, that would make a lot of sense for them. And he's a fun player to watch. I mean, he has a unique aesthetic. He's got that barehanded approach, which is always a favorable thing. And he's also got a good nickname for B-Ref, which is Papito.
He's called Pepito. I love the idea of him going somewhere in a trade, and then his biggest fan, Ichiro Suzuki, joining whatever team he joins as well. That would be what would be ideal for me, because that running joke about Ichiro being just a huge fan of Justin Bour is one of my favorite ongoing Marlins-related storylines. It's actually the only thing that I've enjoyed about the Marlins about the past, couple
I
months.
was gonna ask what the second would be of your favorite ongoing Marlins storylines because that seems like a very, very interesting list to me. But
I
I
like
also
Brian
thought,
Anderson. Like, I think he could be in for a good season next year, but that's it. That's all I got.
that's depressing as hell.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't even know. Like, how do you even follow it up? I mean, I thought maybe you'd be like, oh, I like Jose Urena.
Nah.
Oh. So, on that note, let's talk about something else that's depressing. The New York Mets. They
Oh man.
brought back Jose Reyes again on Thursday, signing Reyes to a one-year deal worth $3 million. And Brian, why? Why do they like Jose Reyes so much?
So in the press release, they said that Jose Reyes would be a bench player. Jose Reyes had a surprisingly decent season last year from all baseball performance standpoint, but giving him $3 million to be a bench piece on a team that desperately needs impact talent is a mistake by itself. Second thing is that bringing Jose Reyes back to this team because of his history and how he was acquired, basically the Mets were able to acquire him at a very cheap value because of his domestic abuse allegations, actions, whatever you want to call them. Again, it seems like they're bringing him back at something of a discount because no other team wants him. And I cannot fathom why they think this is a good idea. I know he's a decent infield utility player, but the Mets are loaded with decent utility infield players. They've got TJ Rivera, Wilmer Flores. Eventually, they're going to have to give Gavin Cecchini a shot. They've got Asdrubal Cabrera. This seems to me like they're adding a player that is completely redundant on the roster because he's a former Met, maybe because the Wilpons wanted to bring him back, and they're completely not caring about the other baggage that comes along with him, which is kind of unfathomable to me. So, horrible move by the Mets. They just seem interested in bringing back former Mets, no matter what their performance level is, no matter what their personal baggage is. And it's not shocking because it's very similar to the tone that they've had for the entirety of the last few years, but it's really, really disappointing as someone who ostensibly wants to be rooting for this team.
I don't even see how Reyes fits on the roster
He
because
doesn't.
you figure they're going to need a right-hand sock for Gonzalez at first base, potentially Nemo in center, maybe even Jay Bruce as well. Well, if they carry a four-man bench, obviously Plawecki is going to be on that bench, so there's one spot gone. And if you have three more spots, Lagares is obviously probably Nemo's platoon mate, so there's another spot gone. Then you have Reyes. Are you really going to play him at first base? Are you going to have Flores move to first base? Either way, that seems like a missed opportunity. And right now, Matt Reynolds is probably projected to take that last spot. Don't know if that'll happen or not. Maybe they sign someone else. Probably
Well,
not, but.
right now I know Matt Reynolds is projected to be that spot. I'll tell you right now, I think Ty Kelly beats him out in spring training, which is one of the saddest things I've ever said in my life. But yes, ongoing podcast concern, Ty Kelly was brought in on a minor league deal because, again, he's a former Met. And I feel like this is the only thing that this front office seems to care about, is bringing back players who have been on this team before. And I know the team made the playoffs in 2015 and 2016, but that is not a recipe for success. So I agree with you. I don't think this fits the roster. I don't think that this is a good deal from a PR, from a, feeling good about rooting for this team perspective. And I think that if they have $3 million to spend, the Mets are a team where, it seems like they have the Sandy Alderson in the front office has to go to management and has to go to ownership in order to acquire any particular player. And it just very much feels like instead of spending, I think what's $10 million on Anthony Swarzak and Jose Reyes for 2018 and signing Jay Bruce to play the outfield, if you were to combine some of that money together and just go out and get Lorenzo Cain or JD Martinez, the team would look a lot better and it would look a lot more interesting. And this way, it seems like they're playing this game where they're adding a lot of mediocre to, not less than mediocre in Reyes's case, talents, instead of trying to do something that's going to really move the needle. And that's kind of disappointing.
That is very disappointing. And also, in theory, that means Ty Kelly or Jose Reyes is going to be the backup shortstop, which doesn't sound good. But I will say, if they want to look at the free agent market and find a potential, platoon mate with Adrian Gonzalez, there's an obvious one sitting there who has experience at first base, who, had a decent season a few years back. And I think you probably know who I'm talking about, right?
No, hit me with it.
Josh Satin.
Oh my God. Oh man. I mean, if all any, I would love for Josh Satin to come back because I was convinced that he was going to be the next big thing when he was coming up with the Mets, or at least the next average thing. So that would thrill me to no end. But I do think concussions have pretty much ended his career. So even if he was the best option for this team, which I don't know, maybe he is. That's horrible. But yeah, that's a ship that might have sailed, I'm afraid.
I didn't actually know the concussions part, so now I feel very bad about this because if I had known that, I would have picked another random right-handed hitter. I will say that we have another deal coming across the wire now, which is that the Royals are agreeing to a deal to re-sign Alcides Escobar. So he will not be going to the Brewers. He will, however, be returning to the Royals, which makes me wonder what exactly the plans are for Raul Mondesi Jr., who has been the shortstop of the future in Kansas City for seemingly the last decade. So, off the cuff here, what do you think this means for the Royals, if anything?
I don't think it really means much, quite honestly. I mean, this is one of those deals. The shortstop market this offseason has been really dead, especially once Zach Cozart went to Anaheim or Los Angeles, I guess, to play third base. So there aren't a lot of teams with shortstop holes. The Royals have a hole there. Escobar's like a middling kind of shortstop at this point in his career. And I doubt it's going to be for such an extensive amount of money where it's going to preempt them from making other moves to retain Hosmer or Moustakas or something else. It's a fit. I feel like this is a fit for this team. They weren't going to get somebody else out there on the open market, and I think everything that they've done over the past few years shows that they don't have a lot of faith in Mondesi to be an everyday shortstop. I think they see him as a utility guy. I'd like to see him get the everyday look at shortstop. He might. I mean, you think there's a chance he could get an everyday look at second base or third base if they don't bring Moustakas back, and maybe they want to move on from Whit Merrifield and get some value for him while he's got some. I don't know, but I'd be kind of surprised if they see him as anything more than the 25th guy on that roster.
That's fair. Although I will say, it seems possible to me that Mondesi takes over the job from Escobar because, look, I've seen his Escobar is not that good. Let's just be perfectly blunt about it. He's not. And I think his reputation has kind of overshadowed that aspect or that reality that he's just not that good of a player. To his credit, though, he has appeared in 162 games in 3 of the last 4 years. So at least he's durable. Mondesi Jr., I don't really have a strong take there. It's possible, like you said, they slot him in at third base or they trade Whit Merrifield and put him at second. But I don't know. I think at some point you do have to let the kids play if that's what you're going to do. And is there any real reason to block Mondesi with Escobar again? I have to think about it some more, but I don't know. This just seems like a very lateral move. It doesn't really move the needle whatsoever for me. But it's possible that Mondesi is actually worse than Escobar, at least when it comes to hitting, which is a terrifying notion. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just don't have a strong take on this other than whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think that Mondesi is already a better hitter than Escobar. I mean, Escobar's offensive production, thanks to that on-base percentage, is somewhere between, like Saw 2 and Saw 3 for me. Like, it's really terrifying. And the one thing that you can say that Escobar's got going for him is he does have some pretty good defensive numbers. He's very solid. He's very reliable. And that may be something that this Royals team values. But at this point, I would go for the young guy over solid and reliable because I think that it's very solid and very reliable that the Royals are going to win about 70 games next year, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's fair. And I will note that I stopped watching that series at Saw 3, and I went to the Wikipedia page at some point last year, and I was mortified at how many of them there are, and there's more coming.
That makes no sense to me. One thing is that I loathe horror movies. I don't watch them. I made a Saw reference, but God knows I wouldn't watch those movies. I'm not. I can't deal with horror movies. So.
You don't have the stomach for it, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. I have no. I feel no shame in saying that, but I certainly do not have the stomach for horror movies.
Wow. We just watched Get Out this past weekend. And while that's not, I guess it's, technically a horror movie, that was outstanding. And
Oh,
yeah, so I'm a big fan of horror movies.
I've heard wonderful things about it. I probably agree with the subject matter quite a bit, and absolutely probably will not watch it.
Have you ever seen Halloween, the original?
No, I've never seen the original Halloween.
This is fascinating to me because, well, you learn something new every day, folks. You
Yeah,
learn something. Because
sometimes.
you watched the Mets and the Jaguars by choice. I would feel like you would have developed a stomach by now.
I get enough of those emotional gut punches from my sports consumption. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, wow. Where is Brody? Because Brody should, Brody would be on topic and he'd be grilling you right now about this, I feel like. And yet he's choosing education over the podcast, which frankly, Ryan, that's a questionable call. You have to
I
be
know.
honest. That is a very questionable
We
call.
we've said this a number of times, but I really feel like Sean's making the wrong decision in prioritizing education over, what he could be learning from working with us on this podcast, which is that Brian doesn't like horror movies and that the Marlins are bad. Really important stuff that we're talking about here.
Yeah, nobody wants a degree anymore. Everyone already has one, so whatever. Jesus, Brody.
Come on, man.
I think that's all we have here because this has been Yet another few days in a slow and boring off season, and thankfully the Brewers gave us something to talk about, as did the Mets and sort of the Royals. I mean, I guess you give them like a we tried banner or something. I don't know, but I think that's all, right? So you wanna.
Yeah, I don't have much else to talk about. I hope that next week we'll have a couple of more big time free agent signings, maybe even a trade or two. But until then, you can contact the show at dfapodcast@baseballperspectus.com on email. You can find the show on Twitter at dfapodcast. You can find all of RJ's work at cbssports.com. And you can check out saber.org if you're looking to read the specific article, which we mentioned before, that RJ had nominated as a finalist for the Saber Analytics Research Award, that piece on concussions, which we've spoken about a couple of times before on the show. So check that out. Check out all of the nominees. A quick shout out to a couple of Baseball Prospectus nominees who made it there, Rob Maines, and the team of Jonathan Judge, Harry Pavlidis, and Jeff Long have also been nominated. I have to throw out the shout out to Baseball Prospectus because that's where you can find my work. And RJ, anything else you want to say before we call it a show for the week?
You also have other BP alum on that list too, Brian. Ben Lindbergh, obviously, and Sam Miller and Emma Bacciarelli. I think she still does work for short relief, and also Jay Jaffe. So a lot of BP folk, which is not a surprise. You know, BP is still, I think, the place to be for public sabermetric analysis, and yeah, it's pretty cool. So thank
It
you
is.
again, everyone who nominated or shared the piece or whatever, and we'll see.
Yeah, and we will be able to share with you how to vote for which of these finalists should actually win the award. There will be voting at Baseball Prospectus, at saber.org, at a couple of other sites. But yeah, there's a lot of great Baseball Prospectus alums, a lot of non-Baseball Prospectus related writing that's really great and insightful. So check that out. All right, so until the Brewers make another trade or one of these other premium free agents comes off the board, we are signing off and we'll be talking to you guys next week.